This podcast is brought to you by eCountability, the world's first virtual mastermind platform. Are you frustrated at not reaching your full potential to grow your business? Did you know that surrounding yourself with like-minded business people is the secret of successful entrepreneurs? eCountability has developed a global mastermind platform to help small business owners that don't have a co-founder, mentor, or coach, and who are overwhelmed with their to-do lists. An eCountability Mastermind group will help you get answers to the questions that keep you awake at night, help you set smarter goals and habits, create more accountability for you to achieve better results, and allow you to help others with your expertise. Our masterminds are extremely affordable because we want something more valuable than your dollars. We want your commitment. So if you're finally ready to work on your business and not just in your business and want to connect with like-minded people, then join one of the multiple mastermind sessions on the eCountability platform. Find your tribe today. Noble Founders, a podcast dedicated to meeting inspiring entrepreneurs. Each week, we aim to provide you with an emotional lift by talking to founders that are using business and entrepreneurship to create a more human element of business, and by doing so, are changing our world. Meet people who inspire us to view the world differently and find more meaning in our business and life. Those people that allow us to believe in the good, who give us the courage to do more and to be more than we currently are. Noble Founders, because business should be inspiring. Welcome to Noble Founders Podcast. Each week, we interview somebody that is doing something different and amazing, and it gives us the courage to change the world. My special guest this week, I'm so excited about this. We had a chat before this, and he's a fascinating character, got an amazing story, very entrepreneurial, very all over the place almost. So without further ado, Ray Blakeney, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ronan. It's a pleasure to be here.
The pleasure's all mine. I just love connecting with people that are doing some amazing things, and you are right up there on the list. Now, before we really dive into to what you do and some of the more detailed things, I like a rapid fire section just so that people get to know a little bit more about Ray rather than just your bio or what's on LinkedIn, those sort of 2D information. So are you ready for a rapid fire question?
Shoot.
Now, first question is, are you impulsive or are you premeditated?
Impulsive.
Impulsive. Wow, you're very quick with that answer. That was perfect. Now, do you know, are you left brain or are you right brain or are you a bit of both?
I would say I'm a pretty good combination there.
Good combination.
I'm a creative. I'm an engineer by training, but I'm very creative.
All right. Okay. Yeah. So you're a mix of the two, which is quite rare. Excellent. Now, can you tell us your favorite book that has a lot of either childhood memories or even something recent that just sort of resonates with you?
Well, recently I've been reading a lot of business books, but if you want to go to childhood, it would be The Neverending Story. That was, I think, the first book my father read to me, a chapter every night before I went to bed. So that still has, you know, a special place in my heart. Recently, as far as a business book is concerned, the best book I've read in the last year is called, I believe, Creating a Story Brand.
Okay. I haven't heard of that one. I might need to add that to my ever-growing list of books. Now, you've traveled all over the place, so this one could be quite interesting for you. What's the favorite country or city you visited?
The answer is actually going to be a little boring as far as the country is concerned. Italy. Yeah, we've traveled a lot. We love Italy. The city we like that is a little different. We loved Capri, which is the island off the coast of Naples. My wife and I spent a week out there, and we were looking for houses at the end of it. We did not buy it. We couldn't afford any of them, but, you know.
Hey, it's nice to look, yeah. Look, Italy is probably top of my retirement places, so I'm with you on that one, Ray, all the way. Now, Ray, you have a lot of interest, but what do you do to relax?
You're right. I do multiple things. I practiced a martial art called kendo, and that helps me relax a lot. It's essentially Japanese fencing, so you hit somebody over the head with a stick, and that'll help you relax. Otherwise, I am a computer geek, so I play computer games, and that really helps me relax as well.
Okay, excellent. Now, what's your favorite purchase? What's the one thing you would take out of a burning house, clutching on, saying, I, this is my personal treasure, I've got to keep it?
Honestly, nothing. Physical stuff has absolutely no interest to me.
Not even the wedding ring or anything?
No, my wife and I actually don't wear wedding rings.
Okay. I'm not particularly sentimental around most things myself, so I would struggle to come up with that answer, and you have none. There's no right or wrong answers. Now, this one is incredibly controversial. Are you a dog or a cat person?
I'm a dog person. In fact, there's a dog sitting right next to me now, and I'm allergic to cats, so the decision was easy.
Okay. Again, I'm with you on that one. My dog is curled up behind me, and hopefully you won't interrupt the podcast, and I'm allergic to cats as well.
Yeah.
Now, do you have a childhood memory that you'd like to share? Something that sort of moved you or made you happy or just resonates with you through sort of almost throughout your life? Is there a sort of life lesson that you've taken from childhood?
Actually, yes, but the memory didn't resonate with me until I was older and I realized what it was. It was kind of a combination of memories, but when I was a little kid, we would have bake sales at school and all these events, and I would sell more than everybody else. And all my classmates would always tell me, Ray, one day you're going to run your own business. And I, at the time, I kept on telling, of course not. I liked computer programming, so I said, I'm going to be a computer programmer, which is what I became. It wasn't until my late 20s where I started my own business and found out I loved it. Did that memory start resonating with me, my childhood memory of everybody telling me, you should start your own business, you should start your own business. I should have listened to them sooner.
That's great. Now, can you name one thing you wish there was more of in the world?
I'm trying to think of a grand idea, and there's plenty of those. On a simple level, I'd say apple pies, because I love those.
Apple pie?
Yeah, if that's a flash question, yes.
I wish there was more apple pie in the world. All right, that could be on your tombstone.
Excellent. Exactly.
Now, can you tell me, is there someone that you've met personally that has changed the way you think or act? It could be a high school teacher or somebody you bumped in that had a profound effect on you and changed the way you think or act.
Yeah, actually, it's a small group of people. I went to a small get-together with 8 people, and I went in there with the idea that I didn't know anything. This was about 2 years ago, and I thought I was a beginner in entrepreneurship. I'd been doing it around 8 years at that point. Coming out of that, the group taught me that I actually knew more than I thought. I still don't consider myself an expert, but it was a real change in mindset, which has kind of helped me move forward, kind of past that beginner's mindset into the, I say, advanced beginner mindset. I'm not going to go much farther than that. But I think that was the most impactful kind of relationship. And I still talk to these people in a mastermind, about half of that group, every 2 weeks because of the impact they had on me.
Okay, excellent. Awesome. And then finally, what's your favorite movie character? And the reason I ask this question is that often it's a reflection of the person we want to be, almost our alter ego, so to speak.
Yeah, Yoda, honestly.
All right, I like that one. That just made me smile. I don't think there were many people that say, I want to be this 4 foot...
green guy with big ears, yeah.
Green big-eared person but he's a phantom of wisdom and he lives, you know, a very long time. So there's definitely positives of being to Yoda. All right, thanks for that. Let's get into more depth about you and your business and your purpose. So let's go back to your early childhood, because you're a bit of a nomad. So let's go through your nomadic life at the start and we'll play it in order. Your family moved to Turkey when you were just a baby, is that correct?
That's correct. I was actually born in the Philippines. My father was a Peace Corps volunteer in the Philippines from the United States, and my mother was one of the staff of the Peace Corps in the Philippines. So I was born there. So I like to say I was actually a volunteer for the first 11 months of my life. That's what both my parents were working in that capacity. And at 11 months old, after a short trip to the United States, they moved to Istanbul, Turkey, which is where I spent the next 15 years on and off. We traveled a little in the summers, but my schooling was almost entirely in Istanbul, Turkey. Technically, my first language is Turkish as a result of that. My first word was vapur, which means boat. We had a house that looked out over the Bosphorus. And apparently, according to my aunt, I pointed out at it and said vapur. So my first word was Turkish. A few days later, I said something in Filipino, in Tagalog specifically, and then I said something in English a week or two later. So when I applied to colleges, I like to say that English wasn't my first language, even though that's a little misleading since literally about 10 days after I said something in Turkish, I said something in English. At 15 years of age, I moved to the United States to finish high school and then go on to college. and then ended up working in a number of different jobs, ranging from Silicon Valley startups to Fortune 500 companies as a computer programmer, and finally a team lead for a small team of computer programmers. At 28, I was sitting in my office, and I realized this is not what I wanted for my life. So I completed the circle, and I applied to the Peace Corps, where my dad was there. I also met my wife through the Peace Corps. She was also Peace Corps staff. After finishing the Peace Corps, we decided to start our first business together, and that's what led me to my life of entrepreneurship. We created our first business, which was a brick-and-mortar language school. We sold that 2011, 2012, and then I've been in the online field since then, running businesses there.
As well as a chocolate factory and a travel agency, so you've obviously branched out and had your finger in multiple apple pies, so to speak.
Exactly. We're trying our hand at angel investing. I might be actually investing in a marketing company in Mexico relatively soon as well, maybe the next month.
Okay, excellent. And can you tell us what was the reason of at 28 just saying this life wasn't for me? Was it the fact that you had those values from your parents that you know, to serve in the sort of Peace Corps? Or was there a pivotal moment? Was there a specific driving reason that made you sort of just have that sort of flip?
There was a pivotal moment, and I actually agree with you that it was probably the kind of these values that my parents raised me with, which led me to it, though it wasn't a conscious decision at the time. The story goes as this. It's actually a 48-hour story. I'll tell it in 2 minutes, but it took about 48 hours. It started in Halloween in Cleveland, Ohio, which I was at the time. I was going out with my friends to a Halloween party at a bar we normally went to called the Blind Pig. I still remember it vividly. And there was some drinking involved. And I remember at some point in the evening, I was standing on the stage, and I wasn't performing, but nobody was performing, and there was no room on the floor, so a bunch of us were standing on the stage. And I remember looking out over the crowd. I was 27 or so at the time. And looking out, some of my friends were about 10 years older than I was, and thinking, you know they've been in this same bar doing the same thing, getting drunk on Halloween for the last 10 years. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. It just wasn't what I wanted with my life. So that kind of planted the seed in my mind. The next day I went to work, and as serendipity would have it, I got invited to a ceremony for somebody who'd been at the company I worked at for 30 years, I believe. It was a great company. It always ranks in the top 50 places to work in the United States. They treated us very well, so I had nothing bad to say about the company. And so we went there, and we had the typical fruit and cheese platter in the middle of the room. And the guy comes in, and they give him his plaque saying, thank you for 30 years of dedicated service. And I was horrified, is what I thought at the time. I did not want to be that guy. Again, there's nothing wrong with that. He was a team lead in an IT department. He probably did very well, sent his kids to college. It's a relatively low-stress environment to be in when you're in IT in a non-IT company. So deadlines are not as strict as Microsoft or Google or anything like that. So later that day, I went back to my desk. I opened up the Peace Corps application and I applied. 3 months later, I had sold my house, my car, and I was in southern Mexico.
Yeah, there are often sort of clues to your path, and you need to sort of spend that time to look back and reflect on that. I had a similar experience at a younger age. I was 18, and my parents both used to work in the tax office in the UK. And I got a job in a similar field as the Department of Social Services, which is same government thing. I was just in a different department in the same building as my mum. And I looked around at all the people there, and all they did was complain, and they had no ambition, no outlook on life. I remember thinking, if I'm here in 10 years' time, somebody shoot me. This is not the life that I want. I don't know what I want to do, but I know this isn't it. And I pretty much quit not long after that, and then started sort of traveling the world and did that. So that resonates with me. I just saw it at a slightly younger age. That was all. But I didn't know what I wanted to do, so it took me a while to figure that out.
Yeah, you're smarter than me. You kind of started on the journey. I realized, just like you, that the only thing that you can do in that position, I remember I bought my first condo, I had a plasma screen TV, I had a nice car. And the only thing you can do is get a bigger condo or a bigger house, a bigger plasma screen TV, and a bit nicer car, right? I mean, that's kind of the treadmill that I was on. Yeah. And I said, you realize I don't want to end my life with a huge house, a huge plasma screen TV, and a really fancy car. That's not really my dream. So I was on the wrong road.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you sort of found that much sooner rather than later, because not everyone does. And self-awareness is a sort of key part to your growth. So let me ask you, when you started your first business, did you have a limiting belief when you started out? Was it something that any kind of fear you had to overcome, that am I going to be good enough for this? What makes me think I can start this business or make a difference?
No, and actually I guess my limiting belief was exactly the opposite, in the sense that I thought I knew everything. Which, again, in retrospect, is very limiting, because I didn't read any books on business. I didn't take any courses or look for a mentor. I simply started it along with my wife. I admit it now, it was pure luck that it worked out. I stumbled across a concept called SEO. This was back in 2007 or 8. And not that it was necessarily a new concept. It was very new in the language field, specifically brick and mortar schools. So I was able to make our Spanish school in Mexico number one in the country on Google 3 months before we even opened our doors. So we got lucky, though. I mean, if I had stumbled across something else, it might not have worked. When we started our first business, we only had about $2,000 in our combined bank accounts. So we would sleep on the floor on an inflatable mattress with a hole in it. So the mattress would be inflated when we went to bed, and we'd be sleep. You know, we'd wake up on the floor itself, because the mattress had totally disinflated at night. We'd roll it up, hide it under the one office desk we had, which was mine. Then we would take the one table we had, the one kind of study table, put it in the room so that we could have class. I think there were three classrooms in our first school. And to vary it, for the first few weeks, we would change the desk to different classrooms, so it actually looked like we had different classrooms, so students could have different, you know, would have class in different classrooms. I don't think they were fooled, honestly, but at least we tried our best. And we got lucky. We were fully booked within a month or two of opening, and then kind of used the money, the deposits people would send us to furnish the rooms before they arrived. And I guess the limiting belief was I thought I knew everything. It wasn't until I tried a second business that didn't work, and a third that didn't work, and a fourth that didn't work, that I realized that, wait a minute, there's more to this. It wasn't as easy as I thought the first time. I got lucky. Let's start learning. And that's when I started reading. And now I'm an avid reader of everything, and podcast listener and audiobook listener. If I'm not working, I'm trying to learn something new.
Right, right. So let's talk about your existing business. Well, one of them, which is the main, which is the online language school.
Yeah, livelingua.com.
Livelingua, yeah. And you've built some key metrics into there around social enterprise. And obviously this podcast is about people that are doing that some sort of change. So can you talk a little bit more about that aspect and what that means to you and your both your family and also, I believe, your work colleagues as well?
Exactly. We try to integrate the social aspect into all parts of the business. And luckily, especially with a new campaign we've just started, all of our staff have come on board. It was an optional program, and all the staff came on board, which told us that we have the right staff that are working with us. There are actually three different things that we do for a social enterprise. One we started at the beginning, the second one we started about a year or two into it, and this recent one, the one we're most excited about, started in the last few months. The first thing we did is when we started building our business, we were primarily a Spanish school online. Now we've expanded to 11 languages, including English, Italian, Japanese, Korean. But what our goal was to provide a good salary, not just a living wage, but a good salary to people in countries where the income is lower, specifically Spanish and Latin America. So what we did there was we charged what is a good price in the United States. At the time, I believe we were charging $9 an hour. We've only raised it, I think, to $10 an hour now, so we're not that much more expensive. But $9 an hour for classes for somebody in New York City, which is a steal. And then we would pay most of that on to the teachers, which would give them a salary way above, I think it was multiples of four or five times higher than what they would make in their home countries of Mexico, Colombia, Venezuela, all the rest of it. So the business was started with that mantra. A few years into it, I ran across some free language material that I had used while I was in the Peace Corps, and that led me down a path to collecting all the public domain language of the material I could find online. A public domain generally is created by the government by taxpayer dollars in their respective countries, which means everybody can use them. They're not owned by any company. So I went around and I tried collecting everything I could, and we ended up having over 130 languages worth of material and audios and videos, and I put them up there for free. They're there right now. If you go to livelingua.com and you want to learn Kiswahili, we have a free course for you. If you want to go there and learn Ikpatan, I don't even remember where that's from, but we have a free course for you. So that's also what we do. Some of these languages are dying languages. that are only spoken by 10,000 people in certain parts of the world. So our mission there is to not only let other people learn languages for free. We don't charge. That's not part of our online lessons. It's also to maintain these dying languages so that people and researchers can kind of keep it, and we'll have information there forever. The problem with a lot of this government material was they got put in a box somewhere and forgot. So a lot of it was lost over time. We're trying to keep that from happening. And the third and most recent one is our focus on education and teaching understanding. The mission at LiveLingua we have is to facilitate understanding through the teaching of language and culture. This new volunteering thing we're doing with Save the Children is we are sponsoring children's education around the world. We've started with 10 kids, and we're hoping to build our way up to 100 children as the business grows. The part where the staff is involved is we gave the staff an option to co-sponsor a child. So they would put in half the pay, and we as a company would also put in half. Every single one of our staff members said yes. You get a little survey of where you want people from, and gender, age. Nobody had a preference for gender. Nobody had a preference for age. Some people had a preference for country simply because they had ties to these countries. They had been there. My content marketer had spent some time in Bali, so he was very interested in, you know, a child from that area, because he kind of grew to love that part of the world. So him and his wife are now sponsoring, helped through us sponsoring a child over there. My wife and I are specifically sponsoring a child in the Philippines ourselves, along with all the other children, of course, that the program sponsors through our company. And everybody else on our team has kind of picked somebody. We're just actually starting. Earlier today is when we got the photos of the children for the first time, so it's very exciting. I shared them with the staff, and we're all going to be getting our welcome packages next week. And our goal is to take that up to 100. We want to help 100 children around the world, at least, maybe 1,000 one day. But for now, our goal is 100 kids around the world, and we're going to help them with their education.
Oh, that's awesome. So can I ask you, Ray, just sort of based on that, what's your key message to people just around your philosophy and how they can get inspired or build that into their startup or just get involved in some kind of way? What would be your mantra or philosophy or any kind of sort of, you know, pearls of wisdom? What would you say to people?
If I could think of one thing, it's that we are one world. And in today's political climate across the globe, they're, you know, not singling out any country where everybody's trying to separate from this group. We are all the same people. So kind of looking at the world in that way, that somebody in Mexico is no less deserving of help than somebody in the Philippines, which is no less deserving of help than somebody in the United States. Not looking at everybody like a them and us kind of thing. That would be my philosophy. And that's actually kind of what our business is built around. Again, we're trying to facilitate understanding in our business. We do it through teaching language and culture, but I think the world needs a lot more understanding. And I think if entrepreneurs go into it with that mindset that you are selling something to make the world closer, a better place, whatever your product happens to be, it's not only good for the world, but it's also good business.
Okay, that's great advice. Can I ask you a question around an idea or a belief that might be somewhat controversial or that puts you in minority? Do you have something that would stand out into that sort of category that is either controversial or something you believe in that puts you in a minority?
I have no statistics to say whether this belief would put me in the minority, but I'm assuming it might. But it's tied into the last statement I had. I don't really associate with any kind of nationality. I have passports. I have two citizenships. I actually culturally am similar to Turkish, which I don't even have citizenship to. But that makes me feel like a global citizen. And on the flip side of that, I have an aversion to nationalism of any kind, which I think a lot of people will. They say you should be proud to be X, proud to be American, proud to be British, proud to be Nigerian. My cousins are Nigerian. They live in Lagos. I have two cousins. My uncle married a woman from Lagos, and they live there. It's very hard for me to exclusively relate to any specific culture or country. And I think that does make me a minority. Most people can say, hey, I'm British. Hey, I'm Italian. If you ask me what my passport is, it'll say American. If you say where I'm from, I would be much more hard-pressed to answer your question.
I actually agree with you on that one. I read recently Sapiens. That's an amazing book about the anthropology of where sort of humans have got to. And they deconstruct it very well to say, well, the idea of America or Australia is just an idea that we've all bought into. It's just a concept. When you consider that the land was always there, you naming it and creating a nationality around it, it's just a thought idea that we've all bought into. And I used to say very early when I started traveling, people say, where are you from? Because I'm half Welsh, half Irish, born in England, but then I sort of traveled. And I used to say to people, well, if you're born on a boat, does that make you boatish? And they had no response to that. Say, well, you must be from somewhere, and try to label me. I said, well, I give that argument, and then they couldn't really respond to that.
Well, that's exactly it. But it even makes it a little more complicated, because I actually reobtained my Filipino citizenship in my early 30s. I had lost it as a child, because at the time you could not have multiple citizenships in the Philippines. So once I got my U.S. citizenship a week after I was born, you know, that's, I think that's how long it took for the paperwork to go through the U.S. embassy. By default, I lost my Filipino citizenship. And it took me a while to get it back because the laws were a little confusing. But there seems to be two, you know, general laws for how citizenship is passed on, right? I am not a lawyer, so I might be pronouncing it wrong. One is jus sanguine, and the other one is jus... Essentially, I can't remember what the other one's called, but one says it's based on where you're born, or it's based on who your parents are. So it gets passed on by blood, or it gets passed on by the earth.
Yeah.
It's strange if you're in a country that only recognizes citizenship passed on by blood. So for example, if you were born there, you can't be a citizen. My sister was born in Turkey, but she could not be a Turkish citizenship because, you know, her parents were not. But if your parents were from a country that also only recognized that, you would be born in a country that doesn't recognize your citizenship, and the country your parents are from would also not recognize your citizenship. It's a strange system the way we're defining all of these things, right? Yeah. Because you're born in a place, you might grow up there, but you won't have that citizenship because your parents are from somewhere else. US, Australia have a lot of that. But then in some places, your blood is not enough, or where you're born is not enough. So the world is getting more and more confusing as to define who you are. I think nationality is going to become less and less of a good way of defining your who you are than other factors.
Yeah, interesting take on it, and a great way of debunking one over the other, because half these people believe this and half people believe that. And the reality is probably neither of them are right. Like I said, it's just a construct that's been made up.
And with globalization, it's even less, because we all grow up watching U.S. television shows now. So culturally, we're kind of mixing everything. Or Korean pop music is now becoming super popular around the world. So, you know, culturally, we're going to be a hodgepodge of everything.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, very hard to identify yourself with as you reach this sort of global, sort of homogenized society that all watches the Kardashians. Or
that would be a sad day if everybody watched the Kardashians. But
yes, I think they are trying for world domination. But I've stopped watching the news, so I luckily don't hear the minutiae of their trivial lives. All right, next one is who or what inspires you, Ray?
That's a really great question. Let's see. It's difficult to say a who. Part of my personality trait is if somebody else has done something before, I kind of become averse to it. You know, I don't want to do it because it's already been done. So kind of emulating somebody else is kind of not really in my personality. But the what is I want to leave the world a better place than when I got here. And I know that sounds kind of not very defined, but I think it's much easier to achieve than most people think. And that's my legacy. That'll be it. If that could be put on my tombstone, that's kind of the big what that I want. I want to leave the world a better place than when I arrived. Okay. And that's what drives all my businesses, the business decisions, hiring, everything. Will it make the world a better place?
All right. I think a lot of people in business start this business with thinking it's all about the money, and or they start with this quite a strong why, and then they get sidetracked and they never go back to it without thinking, really, what am I doing this for? You obviously figured out at 28, I don't need a bigger house, a bigger plasma TV, a bigger car, fancy neighborhood. I need something more than that. So obviously you started looking for your why right then. So that sort of ties back in quite nicely to that previous answer you gave.
Yeah, I actually wasn't consciously doing that. The lesson we learned in the first business was we didn't ask why are we starting this business. It was a successful business, but we had no vacation days for 3 years. And in the summers, due to the nature of the business, we would work, I think, 90 days with no day off. The Saturdays and Sundays we would do tours. It wasn't until the second business that we sat down and really asked ourselves, why are we starting this business? We're still asking ourselves in a way, but once you reach the point in a business where you're making at least enough to pay your bills, I think you have more luxury to start talking about why. In the beginning, there's nothing wrong with working for money. We have to pay rent, we have to have food. If you have kids, you have to send them to school. There are those base necessities. What is it, Maslow's
hierarchy? Yeah,
hierarchy of needs. I'm like, that was the word I was missing. Yeah, Maslow's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Once you've actually met the basic needs, though, then I think why is a very important question to ask.
Yes, because otherwise you end up just buying stuff for the sake of it, and you have no direction other than just to make money. So let me ask you the next question. You talked about masterminds, and obviously I'm a huge proponent of masterminds because that's my key business. And I give away 1 in 6 on the platform for people that are from social enterprise businesses. So if anyone's listening and they have a social enterprise business and they want to join a mastermind for free, I'm the person you need to speak to. But you talked about, I was going to ask you, what does your tribe look like? And you mentioned something about your mastermind group anyway. So let's talk about the people that you surround yourself with, and what do you look for, and why do you surround yourself with those people?
Let me try to kind of encapsulate them in a 2-minute answer, because they're an amazing group of people. They motivate me every day, but there's no one word to describe everybody in the group in any kind of cohesive way. In general, the people that I associate myself with these days are what they call location-independent entrepreneurs, people who run businesses that are not tied to any place. For example, LiveLingua, we have 10 full-time staff and 150 or so contractors working for us. We don't have a single office building. You know, we have no set place. We figure our students don't want to be paying for our fancy office in Boston. They'd rather be paying for great teachers and the quality of their lessons. The people I surround myself are very similar. All of them are in businesses that do this. Specifically in my mastermind, for example, one is a marketing consultant. The other one, she's a published author. One of them, she's a consultant for belly dancers online. So she got, apparently belly dancers are not very tech savvy. So she does that, and she's very successful at it. The final one would be, he creates physical motivational products with a twist. He's got a cool personality. He just, I think, blew through his Kickstarter campaign. He, I think, almost doubled what his goal was. And he's launching some motivational cards right now. These are the people in my mastermind groups. We come from very different industries, but in a lot of ways, we're all kind of at a similar level, successful at what we do, but have the same values. Everybody's volunteers, everybody's dream is to be financially successful and then give back to the community. I could go into examples of one of them goes to, I believe, Uganda every year and helps out there. Another one helps out in different programs locally. Whenever they can, they kind of help and volunteer. And that's why this group inspires me so much. And it's actually part of a more extended community that I'm part of. These are just the ones I see every 2 weeks, but it's a more extended community.
That's a great group of diversity and, but also similarities. So you do, there is the PLU, people like us. We do tend to try and attract people like us. For me, rather than looking at some celebrity who I've never met and who might be great at acting, but I don't know these people personally. I don't see the point of idolizing someone that you've never met who might be good at singing or acting, but you don't know them as a person and you don't get on to even sort of know them. All you do is live your life vicariously through, you know, the interactions you see on TV and social media. So again, I'm with you on that one, that you want to find those people that champion you and have similar values and stand for something. So it's great that you've sort of surrounded yourself with those people. Let me ask you my next question, Ray. What's the worst advice you've been given, or the best advice you've been given?
Worst is, I'm trying to put it into one sentence, but it's the whole work hard and you'll be successful. Now, I'm going to put a caveat on that, because on the surface that sounds right. Maybe it was just me, but maybe I interpreted it wrong. So work hard and be successful. My idea was, when I started our first business, was that I'm going to work without a break for the next 10 years and then I'll be successful. It doesn't work that way. 2 years into it, I was burned out. You need to plan your rest with as much detail as you plan your work, if not more so. So work hard to be successful. That, at least I took that wrong. That was probably the worst bit of advice. Now, don't get me wrong, I work 50, 60 hours a week now, but as we speak, in 5 days, my wife and I are going 3 weeks to Japan. So we make sure we work really, really hard, but we also make sure we plan our rests as well. And I think that would tie into the best advice, was plan your rest harder than you work, plan your work. And I think that's kind of the key to long-term success, not only in work, but in life as well. Because, you know, if you don't rest, you're cranky, you don't sleep well, you get stressed, you have health problems, you have relationship problems. So work hard is the worst advice. Plan your rest is the best advice.
Okay, excellent, excellent. How do you define success? Because you mentioned that just in the last question, and it was going to be my next one, so it ties in sort of quite nicely. What's your definition of success, air quotes? Because for most people, it's different things. But for you, what does that look like?
It ties into the vision I was talking about before, leaving the world a better place. But you can break that down onto a daily level. Today, you made the world a better place than it was yesterday, even in a minuscule way. I think that's a successful day.
Yeah. We are suckered into thinking success is what other people have. And for me, if you look at how they measure everything, we measure GDP, we measure all this turnover of money and stuff. And for quite a few years now, there's been this sort of movement where they're saying, well, how happy are we as a society or as a race? And surely when we're at this point in our inflection of society, when we have so much abundance of everything for the majority of us in that scarce mentality, and yet the majority of us aren't happy. So to me, you know, defining success is, am I happy on a daily basis? Because I think we're hardwired to chase goals and chase things that are outside our reach. That's part, obviously, of our DNA, to be these striving humans. That's what we do. But at what cost? If we can't sort of celebrate the wins and be more in the moment and enjoy some of the simple things in life, then I don't believe that we're successful.
I agree. And I'll tell you, I'm still working on that. I've told you my goal, but I know for a fact that I still have to work at it. An example I'll give is we've been lucky and our business has grown about 400 to 500% in the last 2 to 3 years. But in the last month, we've had a small dip of about 5% as far as signups are concerned. I'm stressing out about it. But then a year ago, if we had had the number of signups we had now, I would have been ecstatic. Yeah. That's the only thing that's changed. You know, just that we already reached a higher level and then kind of took a small dip. I'm not happy with the small dip, even though, again, for the last 8 years, this is much more successful financially on the business side than we have been in the last 8 years. Just in the last 6 months, we were doing slightly better than that. So I was stressed out that we fell 5%. I should.
All right. And now you're going to take a reset. Did you check yourself for that? Did you sort of realize that that wasn't the be all and end all? Did you sort of catch yourself in time, or did someone have to pull you up?
I think, in a way, my wife helps pull me out of those a lot of times, and we both meditate regularly, which I find is a very good way to kind of center yourself.
Yeah.
The balance is between the, you know, I'm going to say, you know, id and superego, but it's more intellectually I know that that's not, I shouldn't be, but emotionally that my emotions don't always listen to my mind. So, you know, it depends on which one of my two characteristics, my mind or my emotions, is in control at the time. Yeah. So if my mind is in control, I'm totally fine with it. Emotions kind of get in there, you know, I might stress out a little bit. Luckily, I'm not losing any sleep over it.
End up with a bit of battle going on there, yeah.
Exactly. I don't think it's ever going to end, honestly. You know, if we're double this size, triple this size, which hopefully one day we will be, I will still panic when we drop 5%, even though maybe 5 years ago we were a quarter of the size we were at. And, you know, I would have been ecstatic to be what we're, even at that 5% low that we are in 5 years, I would have been ecstatic 5 years ago to be at that point.
All about perspective, yeah. That leads on to my next question. So what's next for you to achieve, Ray?
Right now, our goal is, I'm focused pretty exclusively on LiveLingua, and we hope to grow it about 5x in the next 5 to 10 years. From everything I understand, it's possible. We've grown to this level almost exclusively with search engine optimization, which is great. But that, luckily, it also means we have plenty of other places we can expand into that we have not gone into yet. So I'm actually reaching out to experts in different fields right now, evaluating the options and seeing where we can go. So that would be the goal. After that, if we can reach that level, I would love to start a charity. That's kind of my life goal afterwards. The next phase in my life is to start a social enterprise. I don't like using the word charity.
Yeah.
Simply because I believe that's based around an old model of, let me ask really wealthy people for money and I'll build my whole organization around that. That's fine until crisis has come, like in 2008, where everybody stops donating and all of these organizations had to close and all these people dependent on them were left, in many cases, quite literally out in the cold, for, you know, in case of the homeless organizations. I would like to start a social enterprise, and the idea I'm looking at right now is I've learned the power of starting a business online. It's very cheap. We started LiveLingua with a $60 invested in a server, $9.99 for the domain name. I think the prices might have gone up a little bit now, but you could probably do it for under $100 still.
Yeah.
But what did I have? I luckily had knowledge, which was how to create a website and how to do online marketing. Even though at the time, you know, my knowledge was maybe 1% of what I needed, it was enough. Right now, maybe it's a 10%, but I'm still working my way up. But with 1%, you can teach somebody to create an online business and make a living. How much of a living depends a lot on where in the world you live. So where my family, on my mother's side, comes from the Philippines, if you make $500 a month, you're middle upper class. I could easily teach somebody how to build an online business that makes $500 a month within a year or 2 years. I know. To anybody in the first world, they're probably thinking it's crazy. Why would I spend 2 years working on a business that's going to make me $500, maybe $1,000 a month? You're right. In your case, it would not be worth it. But there are millions of people around the world where this would take them from abject poverty into middle upper class lifestyles. It's a comfortable home for them, food on the table for their kids, and good education for their children. They can send their children even to private schools for that amount of money. So I would like to start a charity which helps people do that. It'll be a social enterprise in the sense that the idea would be to create it as a one-year kind of incubator program, like a university. So you teach people these basic skills, you give them the domain, you give them the server space, they build the business, you have coaches, mentors, and teachers there with them every step of the way. You even pay maybe for their accommodations and food while they're there. And the idea is, once they have a successful business, the social enterprise is an investor in that business. So that, you know, a certain percentage stays with us. A minority percentage, maybe 30%, and 70% stays with them. But the idea is, then you just take that 30% and you reinvest it back into this organization.
Into the next one,
Into the next one, exactly. So let's say through this and with some good mentorship, optimistically 10% of the people, 20% of the people are able to do it. So, you know, if you can get 20 people, successful people each year, that would bring in some income. You might even have a unicorn every 5 years who brings in a significant amount of income. So this could be a long-term sustainable program to pull people out of poverty. And everybody who gets pulled out of poverty is pulling somebody else out of poverty right behind them. And it's kind of, you know, in the best way, a pyramid scheme that helps everybody. The more people are successful below you, the more successful everybody gets.
It's the inverted Bernie Madoff pyramid scheme, yes, where the good goes up, not the other way around.
Yeah. That's it. Yep. The guy at the bottom gets successful, then it kind of builds up and builds up and builds up until there's, you know, the point is at the bottom and the pyramid's up at the top and the thousands of people who are pulled out of poverty.
That really ties into one of my newest favorite quotes, because we've all got these quotes and we see them posted on social media and you go, yeah, yeah. And then you just forget them 10 seconds later. You don't embody them. And I rant about that. But one of my favorite ones that I've heard recently, and I've used this about three or four times in the last month even, is that the greatest good you can do for someone is not to share your riches, but to reveal to them his own. And that's exactly what you're looking to do. You're not saying, here's a hand up, here's $500, go and start a business, or $1,000. What you're saying is that I want to invest my time and effort into you and a little bit of money, but I want to reveal to you your own way of making your way and finding your unique ability, your purpose, your ability to sustain yourself for the next potentially, you know, 5-10 years. So that ties in really nicely with that quote that really resonates with me.
I agree. No, that's exactly what I hope to do one day with the organization. The practical side of me, of course, is the reason I'm working right now is I want to get to a point where financially my family and I are okay. Again, no Ferraris, no villas, but as long as I don't want to have to worry about money. The analogy I use, I don't want to be the starving author. I'd like to be the author who's living comfortably. And in the case of charity, that's it. I don't want to be necessarily the social worker who's worried about paying the bills after they work hard every day. I want to make sure that our bills are paid, and then I can dedicate myself 100% to that. And I think that's a responsible way of doing it, because if I'm stressed about things at home, I can't focus on, you know, the people I'm working with at the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. I interviewed Ron Malhotra in one of the early episodes, and he said the same thing. He said, by creating your own wealth, because there's nothing wrong with wealth, it's a bit of a stigma, but you are able to impact more people. So you're right. If your business is just ticking over and you're making a living, you're doing okay, you're not going to be able to have the impact that you want. So by being financially independent, you're then able to dedicate more time, more effort, more resources, and help more people. So it's a win-win for everybody. Which ties me into the final question I'm going to ask you, Ray. I want to talk about legacy. You mentioned it on one of your, very, very briefly, it came up in one of your questions or on the answers to that. So look, whether you like it or not, you're creating a legacy. I want to ask you, and I'll finish up with, how does that make you feel, right?
Stressed and fulfilled at the same time. because we haven't, I'm creating the legacy. The legacy is not there yet. I'm hoping it will be. And that's the stress part. But I also want to kind of point out that stress also has a lot of negative stigma. But I'll tell you, I work really well when I'm under some stress. Now, you don't want to be stressed all day, every day. But I think all of us can relate to, oops, I had a test tomorrow and I forgot about it. And how much, that stress gets you laser focused on something. Or I have a project, I have this project due at work this Saturday and I don't know if I'm going to be able to get it done. And you produce more during that time than you have in the, 3 months before because you need to. So there are ways to harness stress. You don't want to be stressed all day, every day. And that's how I look at stress. Stress is kind of a little fire behind me, making me run faster towards my goal.
All right, fabulous. Where's the best place for people to find you? Obviously, your website is LiveLingua, LINGUA.com. Where do you hang out socially? What's the best sort of social platforms to find you?
Sure. My profile on LinkedIn, you can find it easily just by looking for Ray Blakeney. I should come right up. Or if you look for me on Facebook, Ray Blakeney. LinkedIn, I look professional. Facebook, I'm bullfighting. So if you're looking for a guy bullfighting with or kendo, I think they let us have two. So I'm sword fighting or bullfighting. So that would be me there. I also actually have a personal blog called Teacher Indie. So teacherindie.com. where I write articles to help teachers make a living online. Since I've owned and operated a number of educational businesses, I don't know how to teach, but I do know how to make businesses out of education. So you can also contact me through there. That has a direct contact to me. If you're desperate, go to livelingua.com, contact us through the contact form. My customer service people will pass that email on to me eventually.
All right, fabulous.
Probably within 15 minutes, but, it'll have to go through somebody to get to me.
Yeah, no worries. All right, perfect. Lovely. Look, Ray, thank you again for your time and just to hear your story and what you've already achieved and what you're hoping to achieve. It's a fabulous story. And like, I wish you, wish you luck, but I know you're going to get there. You are a very driven person. So thanks again, Ray. Great to talk to you.
Thanks, Ronan. It was my pleasure.
Thanks. Bye.